Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Until Chris can prove his ability to pronounce the Bengals correctly and not as the Bengals, please suspend Chris Sims without pay.
Damn, you want to suspend me? I'll try to work on it.
Bengals.
It's
Bengals,
your thing. You've been
Bengals,
doing it for so Bengals, long now. You Bengals. Have to just do it.
Yo, 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 what's up? It's Chris Sims. It's Connor Rogers. It's Chris Sims Unbuttoned. I was like, I almost forgot your last name for
there.
I was like, what the hell is his last name? Hey, what's
you recovered
up,
real quick.
Well, I was trying to think of Bengals, Bengals, Bengals. That's right. I am still here at Bozeman Baker. They didn't fire me. They did not suspend my pay. I am here, and we are going to talk about the Bengals today when I break down what the fuck happened with this whole thing. Yes, very well done there, Jefferson Baker. You're very funny. Ha, ha, ha. Hope everybody's good out there. No Ahmed Fareed today. You know what we're doing. It's the Treasure Hunters, What the Fuck Happened podcast. And then we got a lot of Ask Me Anythings, right? Because we have to. There's a lot of breaking news here over the last 24 hours, the trade deadline. And that's where I hand it off to the always better dressed than Ahmed Fareed, Connor Rogers. Way more style. What's up, dude?
What's up, man? Good to be back, especially post-trade deadline.
What a good one to run into. Right?
I mean, well done, Breeders' Cup, for scheduling it. You know, this week, Ahmed, I appreciate always him letting me fill in this chair. And man, what a busy-ish trade deadline for multiple reasons. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of guys moved that we thought would be moved. I think the bigger story was that Washington ended up moving both of their pass rushers.
Agreed.
But of course, we are going to start it. And I'm still laughing at the Bengals thing because I was telling Pete before we started the show, I was like, Chris has always said
always.
Bengals.
This
like,
is the thing back to our Bleacher Report days.
They'd be
people
like,
would get on me.
They'd be like, what did you say? And you'd be like, the Bengals. And it's like, it just is what it is. Kentucky roots, right?
I guess that's the crazy thing is my dad grew up not far from there.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So my dad was like a double horrible person with this. He called them the Cincinnati Bengals,
both
being
wrong.
From Kentucky. And I was always like, and literally, I remember being 8 or 9 years old, and I'm like, he's like, no, you say it's Cincinnati. You remember him saying that to me. Like, you say it's Cincinnati. Trust me, I grew up around there. They say Cincinnati. And I was like, I don't know. And then, of course, as time went on, more people were like, Phil was on TV. And they're like, Phil, you're an idiot. It's Cincinnati, and it's the Bengals, okay? So we're working on it. I don't know if I'll be fixed, though. It might be too late.
Honestly, when you grow up that way, it's hard to change just for broadcasting. Like, I grew up with New York City parents. My dad, they're both born in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
They also lived in Staten Island. Right. My dad worked in the Bronx his whole life, so it was just a mesh of every New York City accent. So I would say things and not know that's not really the perfect pronunciation.
Of
it's too late. It's
of
too
course.
Late.
Oh, yeah, of course. You know? Yes, yes. You don't know until you get to around other people in the country where – you know, their accents are different or they notice. I know I got that when I went to Texas. People were always like,
that
what?
Must have been just
what'd you say, huh? And I'd be like, what? I don't know. We're going to the mall?
Yeah.
Like, the mall.
Water, draw. All those. 100%.
You know, a tournament. That's how I say it. But, yeah, there's a few words there. But English language has never been one of my strengths, okay? So back off, and I'll try my best to get this figured out here.
Listen, let's jump into the hashtag Ask Me Anything because the news around this is very noteworthy because it happened when we were asleep on the East Coast with everything going on with the Raiders. They fire Josh McDaniels.
Yeah.
They fire their GM, Dave Ziegler. They also fire their offensive coordinator, Mick Lombardi.
Right.
So Antonio Pierce, former New York Giants legend, he's going to be the interim head coach. There's just so much going on with this entire situation. So before we even dive fully into it, what was just your instant reaction? Like, is this shocking to you that it happened now? Because this is a little bit of an odd time of the season for this.
It is. I think Josh McDaniels was in trouble regardless. I mean, there was definitely some skeptical end-of-the-game decisions, I think, to talk about. You take over a team that went to the playoffs, and you go 6-11, and then you start out the next year maybe looking worse, right? You know, nothing to really hang your hat on. The one thing I brought up on Tuesday on Pro Football Talk with Florio is they're kind of in no man's land.
That's
right?
The problem.
That's the problem with the organization. It's like, what were they going to do again this year? Go 6-11 and, you know, maybe not be able to get a quarterback again to change their organization or flip it over or get it, you know, some new energy in there. I do think last year that they thought, yes, we signed Jimmy Garoppolo, we're still going to get a quarterback in the top 10. They obviously didn't like Will Levis. The three that they probably did like obviously went, and they kind of got stuck in a no man's land there as far as that. So where is the future? What's
exactly
there to look at? And then also when you look at their roster, like, you know, okay, Max Crosby, Colton Miller. Colton Miller.
Sure.
The
left tackle.
Devontae Adams. And after you get through those three names right there, you start to go, well, who else is a difference maker or an elite football player or somebody that's a game changer? There's nobody else. And, you know, I think it's a very middle class heavy roster. So it was kind of like, where are they going with this? I did not expect them to get fired. I had a little birdie text me about 8:30 last night telling me they thought Josh was in trouble. Now, I didn't think that meant, like, in the next 24
right.
hours. I thought maybe, like, they lose another game next week or in two more games,
right.
He's in trouble. And then I woke up to the news, right? So that's where I am surprised. And I guess I'm surprised, too, because Mark Davis, you know, has kind of been known to not want to give money to people who maybe don't work for his, you know, team anymore. And between Gruden and this now, I don't know what he's paying Gruden.
A lot
he's
of money.
He's going to be paying some people there. I think it just tells you the state of the NFL, though. You know, it's still chump change, this money, even for one of the poorer owners in Mark Davis, that he's like, the hell with it. You got 4 years left on your contract. I'm still going to fire you, and we'll pay you, and we'll figure it out.
So this from Albert Breer kind of has to do with that. He said, Raiders owner Mark Davis' recent post-game meetings with Josh McDaniels were seen by staff as a sign of trouble.
Yep.
One particularly aggressive one happened after the win over the Packers. Davis wasn't happy and let the head coach know it.
Yeah.
This is an owner that's notoriously pretty involved, a team that ownership is always
right,
involved.
Right.
And we had heard everything, Chris, about the rumors, you know, that they didn't have a lot of cash, where firing McDaniels last year wasn't a possibility.
It's always been a little bit of a problem there.
For
right?
sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the players you said, Colton Miller and Max Crosby, this regime didn't draft or acquire those players.
Right.
So I think, to me, it all goes back to your original point, is that they don't have a quarterback that they were saying, this is going to be the guy, and I am going to develop this guy.
Right.
Jimmy Garoppolo is King Bridge quarterback right
yes.
now. There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
I know he gets crushed by everyone.
Yeah.
But Jimmy can be your bridge quarterback while you're waiting for that guy on the roster to eventually play. I'll say this. Do you think it goes back to maybe they should have been more aggressive in this draft? Because everybody, I mean, if I know it, everyone knows it. At 7... there wasn't going to be one of those top three guys.
No,
there,
we
didn't
knew
seem like.
We knew 3 weeks out from the draft.
It wasn't happening.
Like, everybody was kind of saying, no, these three guys all going in the top five here, right? You know, I think Stroud, maybe there was a little doubt there because of the testing.
Yes.
And there was some people that were concerned in the NFL with that. And maybe that's who they were waiting for. You know, there's a part of me that thinks, were they the team that released the information on Stroud hoping he would fall?
Maybe.
I mean, I really have. We've had that conversation on Pro Football Talk, too. But, yeah, you know, you're an offensive coach. You're an offensive head coach. Your offense last year did some really good things. You abandoned your quarterback and Derek Carr, who didn't play good last year, and he said that himself, too. And he blew a lot of late-game opportunities where you're going, man, we're paying you like a franchise quarterback, and you didn't come through, right? They had Devontae Adams, the number one receiver in football last year statistically, and the number one running game in football statistically in Josh Jacobs, right? Still didn't translate into a lot of wins. So I think he got like, okay, hey, you didn't like the quarterback. They're still building something here. But Josh Jacobs, of course, has not been the same this year. Their O-line's not been the same. Jacobs just getting into shape, right? And then the offense has not looked good. And I think with that and, you know, some of the in end game decision making as far as, you know, managing situations, and then add on to, not looking good as a total football team, and then looking down the future and going, wait, I don't see a shiny light or anything that I could go, ooh, well, we got this going. So I think we could turn it around. And I think that's where Mark Davis just said, the hell with it. I'm pulling the plug and we'll move on from there.
It feels like the biggest selling point to keeping McDaniels going going into this year was how Mac Jones looked when McDaniels left, right? Where
sure.
you can argue and say, well, I mean, obviously knows how to coach offense. We saw some of it with his first year with the Raiders. But like you said, this offense hasn't been good this year for a variety of reasons. And it kind of all came to a pinnacle, obviously, in the primetime game where the misses of Davante Adams over his head
and
just the frustration of the team and everything like that. So our first one here is from Isaac. He says, Jim Harbaugh to the Raiders. Harbaugh started his coaching career with Al Davis. He was suspended at Michigan already this year. He might be suspended again with the sign-stealing scandal. Also, Mark Davis loves splashy moves with hiring coaches. There was a report last week that the NFL might impose a suspension on Jim Harbaugh if he tries to return.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. I understand that name being thrown out there. I think that's a possibility. You know, I do think, I think Jim Harbaugh is in trouble in Michigan as far as college football and what's going on with this investigation about, you know, sign stealing and all that. I can see, and, you know, Mark Davis being interested in a Jim Harbaugh. I think the real question, though, is Jim Harbaugh going to be interested in the Raiders?
Who would be right now?
Right now. There's a lot, like we just talked about. It's a roster that you're going to look at and go, you know, like we said, it's limited as far as the talent, what you can do. You got to be, I think, pretty realistic and think, hey, it's going to take a little while to turn this over. Jim Harbaugh was trying to get the Chargers job this offseason. That was him and Sean Payton. You know, they can say what they want, but anybody in the know in the NFL, and why did they want that? Because he saw talent. He saw a quarterback. He knew it was a quicker fix than maybe a situation like this. So, you know, I understand that connection there. My thing would be, does Harbaugh end up having any other options when it's all said and done? And if any of those are prettier with a franchise quarterback or high draft picks that you're looking at, whatever it may be. But yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
All right. I was just laughing at the graphic we showed. If there'll be a trivia question one day of like the 13-year span where Rick Bisaccia
it is amazing,
is the winningest coach alongside Jack Del Rio.
I know you're a little younger than I am, right? But like when I was growing up, and I know you know this, but I mean, it's still shocking. The Raiders were arguably the greatest, most winning sports franchise in our country.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there was a time there in the mid-90s where their winning percentage was better than any other team in any sport, right? So it's just amazing how they've fallen off to this degree for this period of time where, yeah, great franchise, storied in the NFL, all the great players and all that. They have not been able to flip it around. And, you know, I'll give Mark Davis credit in the fact that not doubling down. If he felt like it was time to go, let's make a move and let's be aggressive. And we've seen in the NFL, you can flip over a roster in 2 years and get back to being a really competitive, dangerous football team. So we'll see if they can make that happen out there.
And now they start the process early where they're going to be, you know, everybody knows that job is open. They'll start openly vetting candidates.
That's right. Most likely they're not going to win a lot of football games going forward when you fire the offensive coordinator and the head coach. That means that, it's a soft tank almost within that firing, right? To where, I don't expect them to win too many more games, and that therefore they'll have a pretty high draft pick.
Speaking of a franchise in the similar mold of how you kind of described the Raiders, the Washington Commanders. Yeah. I mean, that's how maybe a little bit before their greatness
but you're right.
Another one where you look at and you just go, what has happened in this century?
Yes.
And the Washington Commanders, obviously a big headliner of trade deadline day, not because of who they acquired, but who they've traded away.
Uh-huh.
The 49ers acquire Chase Young from the Commanders for a third round pick. And the first question here from Hernan Favela: did the Niners trade for a defensive end instead of a corner because of Wilkes' scheme that is more focused on playing zone and four-man front pressure getting pressure?
Well, I think the 49ers traded for Chase Young because they were like, what? We can give you a third-round compensatory pick and get him, right? I think that's why they did it. I know this, right? And again, I hate to say that when I talk about the 49ers because everyone just thinks like I'm being told this by Kyle. I know this from other people in football. The 49ers were looking for a corner. That's what they wanted. That was objective number one, right? I had a team text me last week that, hey, your boy and his team are calling us about our corners, right? So I have been saying this for 3 or 4 weeks that I think that was the number one thing the 49ers needed to do, right? I brought up J.C. Jackson at one point when that went down because I was going, I was kind of hoping the 49ers might be able to snag him. I do think that was still the number one thing they were trying to acquire there. Didn't work out. whatever, didn't get a guy or an offer of a guy that they liked. I don't really know how that unpacked totally there. But the other thing, and we're going to talk about, you know, the Bengals and the 49ers matchup in the notes. Right? Well, what's the next best thing to help your secondary out if you can't get a cover guy, right, Connor? You get more pressure on the quarterback. So
exactly.
Now the secondary doesn't have to cover as much or as long. Right, so that I think is the second best option. Let alone, hey, Bosa's been good, but not great. Okay, and I think great will come here soon. Hargrave, I think I said this on Sunday to Ahmed. Hargrave started off pretty good. The last few weeks, he has not been good. You know, he doesn't pop at all in the Bengals game. I'll talk about that. Armstead, of course, is still Eric Armstead and a player, and he was actually really good. But there's been no production at the opposite end. You know, when they had Samson Ekubom, yep. D. Ford, Charles Amenhue, even though I know they're not world beaters, those guys, they're really good football players where you were like, no, they apply pressure and they make a lot of plays that, you know, go unnoticed by the fan or the stat books and do that. So now you got this to go along with it. And we'll see where it goes. I think the big thing is with Chase Young, you know, and probably why there wasn't the market that everybody thought there was going to be. One, he's been hurt for, you know, 2 years, basically. So people are going to be a little bit like, ooh, I don't know where to go with that. And then the big thing after that is, okay, it's you trade for a guy like that. We're giving assets away. And, you know, he's having a pretty good year, and he continues to have a good year here now and a good defense. He's going to go, well, I'd like to be paid $25 million right. a year, right? And so now you're into, wait, are we going to give him a long-term deal, or we're going to have to franchise him, which the franchise is probably going to be around 27
for
or 28
an edge rusher,
million, right?
It's
an
wild.
Edge rusher, right?
Yes.
Right? So that's where I think there was no market for Chase Young, I think, ultimately. And I think the Niners looked at it and went, wait, we got a bunch of these compensatory picks. We got this, and it's only a third rounder, and we'll take that gamble because we're a Super Bowl team, and we'll push the chips in the middle of the pile for that, and good for them. I was shocked. When
Me
I saw
too.
That, I was shocked. Let's keep going. I wanted to say one other thing. Let me say one other thing
yeah,
about
please.
This, okay? I don't want to jump forward because I know we're talking about Montez Sweat, but I want to hit on the Commanders and what you said. Like, if I'm Ron Rivera, I quit today.
Right,
like,
there's no...
It's over.
Yes.
Like, they told you it's over by what they did yesterday, right? I had told Pete in our viewing room and producer Matt Casey and all that I had heard on Sunday... Even if they won, I think there was people high up in the front office that were like, it's over. We want to trade no matter what. And there was a little bit of a civil war in the building still going like, hey, we still can turn this around and do all that. They lost, obviously, so that wasn't even a discussion. And yes, I would say now those two guys being gone, Ron Rivera, does he want to finish out the year or does he want to, you know, quit? I don't know. But it's over, I think, that whole era.
Knowing him, I would think he finishes
the
out.
Year,
but,
right.
Man, it's a
weird
tough
situation.
It's a weird situation for sure. And we'll get more into the actual players that Chase Young and Montez Sweat are. But this next question from Adam Blackhall. Hey, Gabby, Pete, Connor, and crew, as an Eagles fan, Young to the 49ers is my least favorite. We're about to see a guy who's been underperforming relative to expectation. Absolutely light it up, aren't
yeah.
we?
Yeah. Well, I think that's, you know, as an Eagles fan, right, that's – you got to worry about that. You know, I think that the Seahawks and the 49ers, you know, they made moves, but you got to be thinking about the Eagles. You know, what are we going to do? I can't blitz Jalen Hurts and leave A.J. Brown one-on-one all game. We need a front four that can get there. They got too many other things they do on offense well for us to be.
Exactly. How the Jets beat them.
Exactly. You got to be able to relegate, you know, the other seven guys into the quarterback runs, the actual run game, the screens to the receivers on the outside. If you get too aggressive against Eagles, like, you know, you're screwed. They got too many answers and too many good players. So I got to think those moves were made. But then, yeah, we want to improve our team, but also looking at it going, if we want to get where we think we might be able to go here, and the 49ers and Seahawks, to me, are in the Super Bowl conversation, you know, they made a move trying to go, okay, you know, the Seahawks thinking about the 49ers and what they do on offense, the Eagles do on that offense, and they had to make moves to kind of, you know, get better in those areas.
And make no mistake about it, Chase Young has been really good this year.
Yes, he has.
It's time for Inside the Numbers, powered by AWS, and from Next Gen Stats, when you look at what he's done, he's generated a career-high 17.2% pressure rate this season. That's seventh highest in the NFL. The 49ers now have two of the top five defenders in quarterback pressures this season, Chris. And we know the way these front fours are played in this scheme, I mean, you can really only dedicate help to one guy. It feels like the opportunity for Chase Young will now be, and I know he played in a good front with the Commanders.
Yeah.
But it, I don't know, it just feels with Chris Kocurek and the Niners and what they're going to be asking them to do, this is a really good home for him.
Definitely. Perfect home for him. I mean, it's all about rushing the quarterback.
That's it, yes.
They just, you know, they're a little bit like, hey, get upfield on the way to the quarterback. That's how they play. You know, that's so, and within that too, like if things don't work out and the market's not exactly what Chase Young wants, right? This is where I do think there's some beauty for the 49ers in this trade. You know, if he goes, oh, okay, I'm not going to get what I want, so I got to settle for a lower number, you want to go back to the team like the 49ers
for
that. Because you're exactly right. You're going to set yourself up to blow up the next year and get a killer contract. So that, so I think those, when you connect those dots, that's where it makes sense. And you're right. Chase Young's been really, really good this year. He's definitely added to his pass rush move variety. Like Chase Young, the first few years, I know it was good, but I was always like, I don't know. Like, it's just, it's like he either tries to win with speed or he just tries to bull rush a guy. That's all there was. There was nothing to it. You know, now there is a little bit more variety of the moves. And then with him and, you know, hey, Nick Bosa, again, like I said, it's been good. It's not great. I mean, those stats still tell you it's damn good. You know, I think it's been more of like, a lot of like, oh, he's been close and he didn't get the guy down. That's where I'm kind of going. It's been good, not quite great. But either way, they're going to have some tandem, you know, arguably one of the best tandems in football now. And Hargrave gets going again. And this, you know, hopefully can help Steve Wilks out a little bit as he continues to build through this transition of learning the way the 49ers play defense and how they do that.
So Chase Young's teammate Montez Sweat goes to the Bears for an even higher return. This is a second-round pick. This is a second-round pick that should be a top 40 pick. It feels like no-brainer it's going to be a top 40 pick. So this first one from I Won the Mums, with the Commanders now having five picks in the first three rounds next year, do you think they have their eye on a specific coach and or GM?
I don't think so yet. I don't. I think what they realize is let's just acquire assets right now. We got some guys that the market wants or people want, and let's try to fortify or solidify ourselves or put ourselves in a spot where the next regime can come in and really have some advantages to flip this team over and get it going, right? I think that's kind of how I look at it. No, I think now you make it, it's a process, and we make that decision, okay, we're keeping the coach, but everybody in football now who is a wannabe head coach for next year, has an agent representing them, I think, you know, like we said, the writing's on the wall there to where now they're going to start to be able to be behind the scenes, do their due diligence on some of these guys and try to do the right thing that way.
And now when you're pitching these jobs, if you're the Commanders, you go, we have all these draft assets and we'll give you the floor to use them how you want. If you want to go up in a good quarterback class and get a quarterback.
Right. Exactly right.
I feel like that's what makes a job most attractive is if you have an opportunity to go. I mean, look at the Panthers just did this.
Either you got a quarterback or you're going up to get a quarterback. One of the two, right? One of those two. And we'll see. Maybe, you know, Sam Howell's done some good things.
Yeah, he has.
Maybe in the next regime's going to go, hey, we're good there. We could use all these assets for other things. There's going to be, to me, I don't know. There is just off the coaches and GM thing. I think there is going to be, it's going to be one of the more talented crops of coordinators, I think, to be head coach candidates in quite some time. I really do. You know, when you start to break it down, and I didn't think we were going to go here, so I'm trying to go off the top of my head real quick here. But let me just go like Raheem Morris, okay? E.J. Evero for the Carolina Panthers, that defensive coordinator. Mike McDonald, the defensive coordinator of the Ravens. The Ravens have the best defense in football, for my money.
And his rise has been...
has been phenomenal,
it's been meteoric.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, Ben Johnson with the Detroit Lions.
That's a big one.
That's going to be a huge one. You know, I think Wink Martindale for the Giants and what he does on the defensive side of the ball is magical there. I'm missing some other people here. Hold on. I want to make sure I get it right, too, because I feel like I'm missing somebody else on the maybe the offensive side of that. That's a name that's always in my head. I don't know. But either way, I think there is going to be more some really talented coordinators out there to be had for Washington if they want to go that way, let alone they might have one right on their roster already in Eric Bieniemy. He might be the perfect guy to hand this off to. So we'll see where that goes.
That was Inside the Numbers, powered by AWS. Some more questions here regarding Montez Sweat. This one from Nath Jacobson. How can a second for Sweat but a third for Young makes sense? Surely they're at least worth the same. If not, Young should be worth more. Also, why didn't the Seahawks go for Young if he was available for that price?
I
think that was everybody's thought when the trade went through.
There's no doubt. You know, the 49ers had the luxury of having those extra compensatory picks because of the minorities that they've had hired off of their, you know, staff, which is impressive. So I feel like they probably looked at it as like it was throwaway picks. But trust me, I was thinking the same thing. I was literally like, wait, if it was only a third, like the NFL let the 49ers get them, right? Like nobody else wanted. But I think it was an odd year in general, too, of, you know, some of the teams at the top of football or kind of solidified in that position. Some of the teams at the bottom of football, that's not what they're looking for. A guy right. that needs a new contract and we're going to trade away assets. They're like, wait, we got too many things we got to worry about on our team to now have to pay him. Now, into the important part of the question here from at Nath Jacobson. Let me be clear about this. I said this before the year. I said this last year. Montez Sweat is better than Chase Young. I know this year it's certainly debatable. But Montez Sweat has been better than Chase Young throughout his career. The NFL is, and they showed you that yesterday with the way they viewed it. Montez Sweat is one of those guys that, you know, yeah, he can get double-digit sacks every year. He's very good in the run game. He's got incredible length to get off blocks. He can two-gap. He can really do just about everything. You know, he's got a pretty good football IQ. He affects the game more than he gets credit for. So that's where, and then, of course, he doesn't have the, Chase Young has the second pick of the draft hype and the Ohio State
it's name
hype.
Recognition.
And that's a real thing. Listen, everybody that comes from Alabama or Ohio State, they got to get the fan benefit of the doubt their first few years of the career because there's such a following. We've all watched them on Saturdays every week, and we just go, hey, he's good. Everybody keeps telling me he's good. He's the man. He's the man. He's really damn good. I know that. But he has not been as good as Montez Sweat, and I think that's why Montez Sweat, you know, acquired more for his talents.
That kind of answers our next question, but I do want to talk about the Bears side of it. This is from Connor McGinnis. Why would the Bears choose to pay more in terms of draft capital for the older, former Washington DN rather than the younger, cheaper one? But you kind of answered it. Is this the better player?
He's the better player. He's got no injury history, right? And he's, to me, you know, has a body that lasts the test of time in the NFL. That's where it's a little different, too. And I think, you know, with Chase Young, I would be worried. I'd be worried about, you know, that aspect of like, wait, it took him 2 years to get over a knee injury. I know he's really good, but we know with those type of injuries and all that, that sometimes other injuries come along with it. You know, with the name recognition and all that, too, the money, the hype around the situation. I think that Sweat not only has been consistently the better player, I think he's the safer bet, too. And I think that's why, you know, the second for him and the third for Chase Young.
Did it surprise you that the Bears were buyers?
I wasn't sure they would do that. I kind of wanted to be like, you know, why, right? But for a second-round pick for a guy that's really a first-round talent, I can understand that to go, you know what, we're not going to find somebody like this in the second round of the draft
next
year.
That was my thought.
Right?
You start getting some hits.
Yeah.
They've had a lot of lotto tickets. It's time to – a defense
starting
that –
starting to cash in a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. The defense needs some sure things.
That's right.
And Montez Sweat, like you said, a well-rounded player, a sure thing.
Exactly. So. And then, you know, as it stands right now, what do they got? The first and the third pick of the draft?
Yeah,
right?
I was going
to
say.
So they got enough to play with here. And yeah, they have plenty of assets to still build their team.
And thinking way too far ahead, they might already be thinking one of those top five picks we're going to have, we could trade out and get that pick back anyway.
Well, that's so. always the thing, too, of like, you know, some of these teams make a trade and they have a feel, too, of what's coming up in the class.
Yep.
And, you know, for a guy like me, I'm not there yet, so I don't know, you know, but I think that's a big part of it. Like, who was I thinking, this is a little off that, but like the Raiders trading Darren Waller last year. Right, they traded Darren Waller. I know it was the offseason. They got rid of him, though, because they were like, whoa, there's like seven tight ends that are awesome, right? And
exactly.
He's kind of getting banged up, and we're paying him a lot of money, and his knee's got an issue there, and it always seems like it's something. So you abandon ship there, and I'm sure the Bears have a pretty good feel for what the next draft class is going to provide for them.
All right, this one about the Commanders from Neilmo 2010. What's up, homies? Do you think the Washington D-line can still be a problem after losing Sweat and Young? I think Sweat especially is a big loss for that line. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I do. See, there's a Commander fan who knows, and see, he's watching, and he's going, wait, Sweat's the guy.
Yes.
Sweat's awesome. Like, Sweat is an amazing and run defender, and like I said, he's a damn good pass rusher as well. There's still going to be a handful with those two in the middle, you know, but yeah, to the same degree, absolutely not. There's no guys behind them that are in that class of or caliber of specimen player. No way, you know. But that's what's disappointing about Washington. It's what has been disappointing the whole year. You know, I made fun of them a little bit early in the football season because I'm going, wait, you got five first rounders in your front seven. There's seven people in the front seven. Five of them are first rounders, and you got a defensive head coach, and Jack Del Rio is your defensive coordinator, and your defense sucks. That's not acceptable, right?
It's really crazy.
It is crazy. It is. And that's why, you know, I think we're thinking they don't stay around much longer. But, no, there'll be a drop-off for sure, and I think that defense will show it on the field.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Want to make Mom's Day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat Mom to the good stuff from just $30.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The last big trade here, we kind of hinted at this one. The Seahawks acquire Leonard Williams from the Giants for a second-round pick this year and then 2025 fifth-round pick. Our first question is from Tampa 2 coach. I actually love when you and Connor team up. Don't you think the Seahawks would have been better off with one of those Washington edge rushers over Leonard Williams? I think a lot of people are missing, though. The Seahawks won, I think. Their young edge rushers are turning the corner.
I agree.
This year.
I agree.
Nobody's really paying attention to that.
No, I know.
And Leonard Williams gives them that interior beef that now you're starting to become a little bit more stout. That wasn't Chase Young's game.
Right. No, I think exactly right. Exactly right. I think you hit it on right, too. They got some edge guys that, you know, whether it's Taylor, you know, the rookie Haw from Auburn, right?
Boye Mafe's
had a very good year. Yeah. We're missing somebody else. They just got Frank Clark, right?
That's right.
So they got a little depth and talent there. I know everybody looks at it and goes, wait, they lost Uchenna Nwosu. They're not going to be okay. And it's like, no, they are going to be okay. And I think really, too, the big thing with the Seattle Seahawks, and if you kind of break them down, right, their pass defense has not been good this year. And of course, it's not because of lack of talent in their secondary. It's not. It's they've had to worry too much in loading the box to try to stop people from running the football. And like we just talked about, if you're going to – they looked at it, I think, the other day and went, wait, we got a chance this year. We're here, you know. We got a chance to win the NFC West. We got a chance to – you know, you don't know how it plays out. The 49ers and the Eagles got to play each other in the divisional round, and we just got to beat one of them to go to the Super Bowl. We could do that, right? So I think that's where they looked at it. I think they looked at it and said, wait, the 49ers and the Eagles are the class still. And, oh, wait, Detroit and that big O-line. Oh, no, we got to worry about them too. I think that's where they looked at it too. And now they don't have to relegate so many people around the line of scrimmage to stop the run. Now you got a Draymond Jones, who's a baller, and then you couple him with Leonard Williams, who were both very versatile, D tackle, D ends, can do 3-4, can play 4-3, to where now they can not have to be so aggressive with their secondary to help out in the run, and I think cover a little bit more, and I think it's going to make them a more, you know, effective defense altogether. But I think your point is the right point, that they got some young up-and-comers. You know, what the hell is his name from Tennessee? Taylor.
Taylor, yeah.
I know.
Darrell Taylor?
It's Darrell, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's
Darrell,
it. Right. Darrell, yeah. Right. I don't know why I wanted to say Davion or whatever.
They've taken second-round swings on athletes at edge, it feels like, forever.
Yes, they have.
It's starting to work out a little bit.
It is starting to work out. And they're kind of doing it, yeah. It might not be one superstar, but it's like a lot of good guys with depth, and they can rotate them in, and they're fresh. And, of course, they're psychos because they play for the Seahawks and Pete Carroll.
Our next Seahawks question is from Mehmet 305. Does the potential possibility of re-signing Leonard Williams in the offseason have any influence on the Seahawks to prefer him over the Sweat or Young who got traded for less?
Well, you know, I think so. You know, I would think before they made this trade, they looked at, you know, the balance of their checkbook and went, wait, can we, you know, give the Giants a second round? Can we make this work for him long-term wise? I don't think he's going to ask for top-of-the-market type money.
He's from the West Coast.
Right.
He's already got
That's
a massive
right.
payday.
USC guy,
yeah.
Right. And I think he's not going to get like some of the D-tackle contracts we saw. He'll be like that second group underneath it. And I think they're probably thinking they can afford that.
Let's take a look at the NFC West odds and the upcoming schedule, courtesy of our friends at DraftKings.
Ooh,
of
baby.
Course, when you look at the Niners there on the left, they are on the bye. They got Jacksonville, the Bucks at Seattle. That is a NBC and Peacock game. At the Eagles, and then the Seahawks again. The Seahawks, of course, they have the Ravens. Tough week 9 for them. The Commanders, ironically, as we talked about a lot today, at the Rams. 49ers, once again, Cowboys, 49ers.
Yeah, it's a tough stretch right there. I mean, for both football teams. I mean, again, the Seahawks with the Ravens this week, I could argue that the Ravens are 1A. Like, the Eagles are the best team in football. The Ravens are right there with them. I think the world of the Ravens. Now, yeah, they got the Commanders. They got the Rams. They're certainly better than them. You know, Rams, though, they know how to defend Seattle. It's a divisional game. That's scary. 49ers, 2 out of 3 weeks with the Cowboys sandwiched in. We're going to have a real good feel for where both of these teams stand because, you know, the 49ers after their bye, I'm like that with the Jaguars. What I just said about the Ravens, I'm going to say the same thing about the Jaguars. The Jaguars are one of the best teams in football. They are. Now, they're still growing as a team, but their talent and what they have on their roster, they are a Super Bowl caliber football team in my for my money. Got the Buccaneers after that, but then Seahawks, Eagles, Seahawks, as we know, that's going to go a long way there for the 49ers and Seahawks to figure out who wins the NFC West.
The Niners minus 235 to win this division, the Seahawks plus money at plus 200, and ultimately, Chris, it'll probably be decided by the two games
against each other.
That's why those are division games.
That'll get personal. When you play a team twice in 2 weeks, you know, or 14 days, basically. Oh,
a lot of adrenaline in those ones.
It gets personal. You can still remember the things the guys in the field said to you or how you played. It's really still very visual in your brain there that does make it personal.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly.
Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day.
Download the app and use the promo code UNBUTTONED when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook,
the crown is yours.
Man, I have that ingrained in my brain right now. Barry,
I'm sure
Barry
you do.
Likes to say the crown is mine.
Oh, right.
On Happy Hour. Very,
that fits
very fitting.
Him. That's very fitting.
Very
me,
fitting.
Me, I, Matthew Barry. Yes, it does fit very well.
Oh, man. All right, some breaking news here on the show. The Raiders will start rookie Aiden O'Connell at quarterback over Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
I mean, if you did all the other things, this was obviously the logical probably next
move,
right?
I'm off the top of – well, yeah, you know – Jimmy signed a what? How many year deal?
Was
it a
one?
It's a 2 year deal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'll check the how much of it is real money.
One, you know, like you said, Jimmy's a bridge starter. I think Jimmy's about to be relegated as a backup quarterback. Really, I think that's where we're going here, and he's got an injury history. I thought it was a 2 year deal too. That's why I was asking. Right, I probably should have looked that up before we started here. But I would think a little bit of like what happened with the Colts and Matt Ryan last year.
Technically a 3 year deal.
It's technically a 3 year.
Technically
deal.
All right. So it's technically a 3 year, 72.8.
But they can probably
contract.
They can get out of it after this
year. Exactly. 45 guaranteed, 33.75 fully guaranteed at signing. It's basically one of those things where there's a massive roster bonus due in 2024. So when you're looking at,
yes,
if he's designated as a post-June 1st cut after this year, they would save $13 million on the cap, but it would cost them over $15.5 million to do that.
Ooh, yeah.
But I wouldn't be shocked, honestly, if they just take the savings and call it.
I think so. I think that's right? Where we're going. One, he hasn't played well. Two, he's got an injury history. And three, they don't want to be, he gets hurt for the year, and now we're stuck with paying him fully last year or next year. So that's where, this is like when Jim Irsay and Frank Reich, that's why they benched Matt Ryan last year. It was the same thing. Wait, we're not doing good. He's not playing good. He's getting older, and we don't want to be on the hook for what we might have to pay him for the following year. I think it's the same thought here. And, hey, you get to see what you got in Aiden O'Connell. You go from there, but I'm not surprised by that move at all.
All right, so the Raiders moving on to, I wouldn't call it a new era because they obviously could still end up taking their quarterback of the future, but O'Connell's going to get a shot.
Yes, exactly right. And I think, in all, he did a good job, in the time he has played. Yeah, he's not the answer. I can tell you that right now. He's not. But I think going forward for the Raiders, he could be your backup quarterback for a long, long time. I think that's the good thing.
And that alone would be a win. We'll continue trade deadline. Ask me anything. Lions acquired wide receiver Donovan Peoples-Jones from the Browns for a 2025 sixth-round pick. Corey Joskowitz asks us, does the DPJ trade from the Browns to Lions speak to the lack of development by Jameson Williams? Feels like they play the same role. Also need Pete. I always say, I mess up his last name like you do, too.
Demolatus.
All right. On the pod soon. Chris's imitation is making you look bad. What have you done to Pete on the podcast?
Well, I've always had fun with his name. I used to go hit Pete
Demolatus,
right? I don't do that as much anymore. But then I got on Pete, I think, 2 weeks ago for his laugh. He has like a cackle.
It's a great laugh.
It's like the Joker.
Right? Yes. Right? It actually makes you feel like what you said was really funny,
exactly.
Which I appreciate.
Yes, right. So that's where I've had some fun, and people want to hear that. And I do think we should probably open up the mic for Pete. I've been saying that. You just need to make him, because Pete's always in our ear. He's part of this pod. People want to hear from him. They hear me talking about him all the time. So we'll try to get that.
Free Pete.
Our man, Corey Joskowitz, who we appreciate your questions. Always, you the man. I don't think this is about Jameson Williams. I think there might be a little bit of insurance there. Jameson Williams, again, he's coming along, right? It's not the easiest situation. He got drafted and he was not 100%, and he was never 100% last year. And then, of course, you get suspended for four games, right? He's a young kid. He's still getting used to the NFL. Right. And from everything I've heard, he is a young kid. He's still a little immature in some of his ways and becoming a professional. The one thing you cannot deny, and again, you saw it on Monday night a little bit, he can fly. He can absolutely fly. I think this is more about just bolstering the room together. Right. And, I think it's more of a, we just need another proven commodity, because if Amon-Ra St. Brown goes down, we're almost into, it's Josh Reynolds has got to be the meat and potatoes wide receiver for the most part, right? I know they got Khalif Raymond. He's a good player, but he's not like a guy you're going to go, well, let's make every pass play for him this week. He's a smaller jitterbug gadget type of receiver, right? So now you have another guy, whether an Amon-Ra St. Brown goes down for a little bit or a Josh Reynolds goes down a little bit, we got a guy that can work the middle of the field, has a physical presence as a receiver, can catch a slant over the middle and take a hit and do all that. A true professional with some size and, a little bit of speed to that always has surprised me, actually, coming out of college, that can beat you deep. But I don't think it's necessarily about Jameson Williams. I do think, though, it kind of just helps that room and gives them one more for sure thing on the roster to depend on, instead of just having two guys and then going, I hope Jameson comes to where we think he is by week 14 or 15, right? And I think they're protecting themselves that way.
And, I mean, the cost was almost nothing.
Yes, exactly
2025,
right.
Sixth round
the
pick
Browns had moved on, which was surprising to me, but the Browns made it pretty clear a few weeks ago that it's going to be Elijah Moore, Amari Cooper, and
I think they like Cedric Tillman
a lot,
too. And
Cedric Tillman, too. They got him, who's very much like a Donovan Peoples-Jones,
big-bodied
right?
Big-bodied wide receiver, 100%.
So that's where I think their head is at.
This next one from Caruso, with the Bills acquiring cornerback Rasul Douglas and a fifth-round pick for a third-round pick, he asked, Bills trading for corner instead of wide receiver, good decision?
It's not horrible. I don't know. And I, of course, would like to have seen them get another receiver. I've been saying that. I don't know if any of those guys would have been such an upgrade to where I'm like, oh, they're okay now. They got Donovan Peoples-Jones. You mean they got another Gabe Davis, right?
Exactly.
So I don't know if there was a guy there that really can make a difference for them. I will say, as I said on Sunday night, if the Bills can show they can throw the ball and distribute to the other guys and really have an offense for, Shakir and really get Gabe Davis the ball, take a little pressure off of Allen that way and the Diggs combination, then they can be okay there. Now, we just got to see them do it. They got to apply it in the playbook and apply it on the field on Sundays. I think the trading, though, for Rasul Douglas is a good thing. Their secondary has been banged up, and you worry about it, right?
They don't trust a lot of their young corners. No. I mean, they obviously used the first on Kyrie Elam. They never trusted him.
You can tell they don't.
No, I mean, they don't want to play him.
No. Elam is I liked him in the draft. I didn't love him because what I worried about was he's fast straight away. He's got some strength. His change of direction skills are below average for that position. And I think that's where they probably don't like him. And, Rasul's a guy that can kind of do everything, really. I mean, he can play safety. He can play corner. He can play nickel. And I think that's probably where it's a good thing for the Bills there.
This one from Billy Mustafa. Did Connor have his eye on anyone for the Jets? Or was he hoping for the Jets to maybe be a seller on a particular player? It's interesting. I thought that they would maybe look to move Carl Lawson or Dalvin Cook just because they don't play a lot, really. But at the end of the day, I'm sure nobody probably wanted them. I think that would be number one
for me. That contract for a guy that's had two serious knee injuries, maybe three. I think maybe with Carl Lawson,
he had the
three?
Hip in college,
right? And then he had one with the Bengals, didn't he?
Yes, a knee.
So it's a third.
So this is three injuries now, and getting closer to 30.
I agree with you. There's not going to be a market for that.
There's no market.
And he's making money wise, no way.
And then going out and getting someone. That's where it's tricky because the Jets, they're running out of players on the offensive line. The only guy that really got moved yesterday was Ezra Cleveland. They brought Roger Saffold in on the practice squad.
Yeah.
I always say this when people ask this, and I think it's a totally fair question. There are no offensive linemen at the trade deadline. There's barely any during camp cuts.
No. There's barely any for teams to build a team in the offseason right now.
Starving for offensive line. Honestly, I'm at the point with offensive line playing the NFL where if I was going into a draft with all seven of my picks every year, I think I would mandate three of them should be on the offensive line.
I'm getting closer
to that point where I would take at least one guy that I think can play in year one and then at least another, maybe two guys that are developmental athletes.
Right. Like I see it in them and in the year or two, he could help us out and maybe start on our football team, let alone just maybe be a great backup. I think it's one of the hardest things to acquire in football right now. Like you said, we've had these conversations, you and I, right? I mean, I think there's more good D linemen ever in the history of football, like ever. It's the D lines are stacked, some of them. And so there's way more talent there. And if there is an injury, D lines, for the most part, don't fall apart because there's so much talent on them. No, it doesn't matter what D line it is. O line, it's teams can barely put five together. And if there is an injury, and especially at O line, where being five and conducive to and working to each other and all that, there's great value in that. Yeah, there's not enough, let alone we've had this conversation where I'm getting back to is college football. It just right now, that's where college football has failed the NFL in that. The fact that college football, the spread, we're just going to get our eyes in space and do this, it's gone back to kindergarten football. There's one run and there's one pass protection in all college football unless you're in the SEC or the Big Ten. And other than that, it's like, oh my gosh, this is elementary. And those, if you look at it for the most part, are where all the linemen come from, is the Big Ten and the SEC. They're all from there for the most part. And it's a problem there. And, there's none available, to your point, at the trade deadline.
You know how every draft we always start a quarterback scouting report with, comes from a pro-style offense?
Yeah.
You should almost be doing that now with offensive linemen.
No doubt.
Some of these guys that come out aren't even taking true pass sets. It's all quick game. It's all three-step drop.
Step to the left, step to the right, close that gap off. That's all it is.
Right.
They have no idea how to man-to-man pass protect. They don't know how to block down. Let's pull around the edge. You kick out. I wrap inside. Some of those things, we've never made a dual call in our lives, like where the guard and the center are going to block the nose tackle and one of us is going to go up to the linebacker. Like, we've never even done that. There's things that are basic NFL things where you look at college football and go, these guys have no clue how to do this. They've never done it. And that's where I've always calm down with the rookie offensive lineman, like, overgrading them too early on in the career. It's a huge adjustment at that position. There's way more offense in their brain. There's way better caliber players they're going against on the other side of the ball, you know, and there's an adjustment period for that, even when you come from the Big Ten or the SEC at offensive line. It's still an adjustment period.
This last Jets one from Amiri Jets. Why didn't the Jets go get a wide receiver such as Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, Darnell Mooney, or even Hunter Renfro? Garrett Wilson seems to be the only guy that can get open and not drop passes. Thanks, guys. I'm happy I get another pod with the Connor and Chris duo.
Yeah. You know, I mean, listen, I think that was one that I think we all thought maybe could be something they look at. At least I was thinking that. Like, would they try to find somebody? You know, I don't know what the answer is there. I will say this, like, you know, was Darnell Mooney up for grabs there? Anybody
right.
like that?
I don't know, right?
It doesn't sound like Cortland Sutton or Jerry Jeudy. From everything I know, you know, the last few weeks, Denver basically went, no, we're going to keep our team. We're going to try to build
here. That's what it
feels like. Yeah, that's what it definitely was.
And
I know
they're
this.
Winning now.
I know there was some teams that were in talks with Denver 3 weeks ago about trades and things like that, and they pulled back on everything. So that all ended. You don't want Hunter Renfro. You don't want him. The Hunter Renfro, did you watch the game on Monday night? He can't run. He can't get away from anybody. There's a reason he hadn't been playing much in
the
Raiders.
Money.
I know.
So Jets
you don't
fans
want
ask
him.
Me about him all the time.
Right. And was, 13 million? What was it?
I think
it?
11.
11? Right. So
it's a lot.
Right. It's a lot of money for a guy that I think is very questionable to go, is he already past his prime, right? And as I've said on this podcast, some of these smaller receivers, it's ending in the NFL. I know from too many coaches I text with and coach that it's just like, you have to be out of this world quick if you're small. Defenders have got, there's too much man-to-man in the NFL. They know how to take away leverage and make things too hard on these smaller guys to where they can't get off bump and run or some of the physical coverages they got to. And I think that's the problem with Hunter Renfro.
And the Jets just went through this with Braxton Berrios and Elijah Moore. They were small at wide receiver, the Jets, and then they made it a mission to not be small anymore. They have Xavier Gibson out there, an undrafted free agent, but that's a little different
right.
of an investment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it goes back to the point of you just don't really know what's available.
No, you don't know what we don't know what was available. I don't think any of those guys were really available, you know, the Jets, I think they're content with. Like, we're going to play defense. We're going to continue to try to run the ball. And as you saw last week, as long as Zach Wilson just doesn't turn it over or do anything dumb, the Jets have a chance to win every game. That's really what it is. As long as he can manage the game, make a few passes here and there, don't make any mistakes offense, they are going to be a handful no matter who they play, as in why, you know, they came back last week against the Giants or beat the Eagles a few weeks ago.
Our last Ask Me Anything is Giants related from eNeil_2000. Should the Giants have traded Saquon?
Well, I don't think so. I don't. You know, he's one of the few blue chip players they have on their football team, and I look at it and go, I don't think he has limited years here left. I still think he's got a lot of juice in the tank here. So that's where I wouldn't have given up on him, let alone I don't think the market for a running back and a guy who wants a huge contract and be paid and all that and does have a little bit of an injury history as well, I don't think the market is what people think it is for that guy. You know, everybody – with running backs, it sucks. Everybody looks at him and goes, damn, he's a good player. Whoa, you want that for him, though, a running back?
Yeah.
And then that's where there's a disconnect in – the running back position right now.
And realistically, they could just tag Saquon again. I know that kind of stinks, but that's the reality of the position right now, where it's not like it's not a situation. The Commanders probably saw it with their DNs. They're like, we're not going to be able to pay this whole defensive line.
Exactly
right. The Giants aren't looking at Saquon Barkley like, well, he's walking at the end of the year. Let's get something. They'll just retain team control if they have to.
If they have to. Or, you know, with these type of situations too, they might be able to dangle a contract out there for 2 or 3 years where Saquon goes, you know what? I love the Giants. I grew up in this area, right? And I don't know if I'm really going to be able to get more on the market. If I am, is it going to be significantly more than where I want to change my life? And I think they might be able to get kind of a hometown type of deal for a guy like Saquon in this situation.
All right, coming up is your Week 8 film review. I have to run.
You are big time.
Not big time, just busy.
Yeah. So. You're going to go with Matthew Berry, do some fantasy talk.
Yeah, we'll see what happens today.
You're going to leave me all to myself to where I have to read my damn notebook myself.
To
so
be
that
honest,
should be fun. You know?
I really wanted to stay until the last 30 seconds right. because that would be very on band.
Berry will be right there. He won't be there
I'll
yet.
I'll beat him.
Right.
I will beat him if I
well,
if
let
I
me
give
know
myself
if you want to stay here at 11:59. Yeah. I'm down. We can change the rundown right now.
I really wanted to stay for the film review. I got to read some of your notes last night, which is always fun, but I always appreciate you having me.
Hey, you're the man. I appreciate
Thanks,
you coming
Sims.
On, saving the day for us, looking cool,
we'll
as
do it
always.
Again. We'll do it again soon.
We will do
Especially
it again
with the draft.
Soon. Yeah, we will. And, you know, I'm sure there'll be a few more times where you got to fill in for Ahmed, who does a lot of work for NBC as well. All right. Connor's going to step out, and then we're going to dive into the Week 8 film review, What the F Happened, a.k.a. Treasure Hunters, coming up next.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
All right, Connor Rogers is gone. He's off to his fantasy show, and now it's what the fuck happened time. Okay, we're going to dive into it. First one, the Bengals over, it's the 49ers day. A few things I want to hit on here, first off. All right, want to say this. You know, and I didn't write notes for this part of it, but I'm going to start it off and kind of go off script for a second with Pete Demolitis here, is that, you know, a lot of talk this week, are they going to bench Brock Purdy, right? The world's lost its mind. I mean, literally 2 weeks ago, everybody was telling me he's Tom Brady. Now we're going, is he going to bench Brock Purdy? All right, come on. It's not that drastic. And, you know, the Vikings game, there was a lot of good. Yeah, he threw two picks at the end of the football game. You know, one was a little bit out of a desperation. Another one, yeah, he made a mistake, threw the ball too early. I don't know if the route was run correctly. All right. Last week, let me say this clearly here, right? Brock Purdy, watching that game back, it might have been. Yeah, and I know he's got the two turnovers. I get that. You take away those two turnovers. I think Brock Purdy made more plays and great throws in the game last week against the Cincinnati Bengals than he's made in any other game so far in his NFL career. In fact, when I went back and watched it, I went, if Brock Purdy didn't make some of these unbelievable throws, the 49ers are going to get blown out. I mean, that's just the simple fact of it. He was actually, that's where stats can lie. I understand, you know, we're all looking at, okay, he threw two interceptions late in the game, and you can't do that. We know that. He knows that. Everybody knows that. I get it. But still, the play itself throughout the game does not warrant anything about benching a quarterback. It really was high level. Some of the third down throws, five from nine on third down. I mean, they were in some of them were in tough situations. He made some big time throws in this game that went above and beyond, you know, the Shanahan system and all that. So I actually saw some encouraging things there. I think he'll learn, grow from it, and protect the ball better as we go here. And they got to help him out, as we've talked about. It can't just be the Brock Purdy show. He's not Mahomes or Josh Allen or that. He does need a little, we got to run the ball, we need Debo back healthy, all that. Now, let's hit on the Bengals overs, the 49ers D. All right. I think here's the first things we just headlines right off the bat. Okay. One, Joe Burrow being healthy. I mean, duh. His movement, his ability to move four or five times a game, scramble, get out of the pocket and make a throw, you know, for an offense that you know and I know and I've been telling you guys, all you listeners out there, that doesn't exactly like blow the doors off in creativity, those plays are huge for that football team. They are. Right. Then I think when you couple on that he is healthy, right, and he can move and he can feel confident, he felt good in the pocket. He's not worried about protecting the calf or anything like that. He threw the ball unbelievable. The decision making was unbelievable. As I say about Joe Burrow, he is the greatest zone pocket passing quarterback in football. Nobody can manipulate a zone, read it out quicker than he can, and find the soft spot and wheel and deal better than he. He's amazing. I think the other thing we're going to talk about this football game, hey, the offense continues to grow, but the big thing is the O-line. The O-line brought it to the 49ers. That was one of the big things. You know, in the run game with Joe Mixon, and it was really the first game all year where I went, hey, Joe Burrow's got good pass protection. Right, I know he was under pressure a few times, but for the most part, he got to sit back there, take a hitch, take two hitches, whatever else, and kind of read it out. And then I think the other thing on top of that, and as we'll dive into this here a little, is, yeah, I still think we're in the process of Steve Wilks trying to figure out how the 49ers, you know, call defenses, right? One of the things I wrote in my notes the last few weeks, you know, I think the 49ers, it's time for them to be more of the aggressor, right? Maybe take some tactical chances. Maybe blitz a little bit more than what they have. I think right now, you know, it's a little too much in lineup and what we're in. There's not a lot of great disguises, right? There's no blitzes like I'm talking about. And they're not good enough right now at this moment to just go, hey, this is what we're playing. We're lining up in it. We're going to be sound, and then we're going to be able to play fast. And it doesn't matter if you know what defense there is, and we're going to still kick your ass. They're not playing good enough for that. So that's where I do think they got to trick it up a little bit, right? And, you know, Pete, maybe that's where we get to the blitz graphic. How did the Bengals O-line hold up versus the 49ers? You know, San Francisco's 21% blitz rate is the third lowest in the league. And last week, it was an NFL low 13%, right? So that is a lot of pressure on your defensive line to get to the quarterback. And the Bengals, it looked like in the bye week, have figured some things out, certainly upped their game. And across the board, they were much, much better in the football game. That's for sure. All right, but I think, you know, as we get into this and look at the how did the Bengals' offensive scheme look, right, and all that, I think, one, we saw, again, an offense that kind of knew the rules of the 49ers, and if we motion here or get in this formation, we got a pretty good idea that they're going to play one of these two coverages, and we know the rules, and we're going to try to expose it, right? And maybe that's where we want to go inside the notebook, right? That's where I'll show you first here. We got the photos of the Bengals' third TD, okay? And it was a play that was in last week. We kind of talked about, and I think my notebook will pop up here in a second, where, you know, last week we talked about a play in the Vikings game where when it was like a slot receiver man-to-man, they want to protect against the slot fade, right? That's what they're worried about in some of those bump man-to-man type of situations. Well, they got here, you know, this is to make the game, I think, 24-10. After one of the Brock Purdy turnovers, they act like they're going to throw the little bubble screen to the right to Tyler Boyd, right? And within that, usually the guy in front of him, in this case it's Ja'Marr Chase, he goes out and blocks the guy that's supposed to cover Tyler Boyd. And in this case, it's Charvarius Ward. So, you know, now what happens in these type of things, these two-on-two type of situations, you run this type of play or this type of concept here, and it put more stress on it in the fact that they have Chase on the ball inside with Boyd just on the outside of him, right? So now what happens when the defense sees this kind of combination, right? 26 Oliver, his thought is, wait, Chase is about to go block Charvarius Ward. So I'm the one that's going to have to go and make the tackle, right? And within that, Chase comes off the ball, looks like he's going to block Jarvarius Ward, and then he shoots up the field. But there was a little bit of a hesitation by Oliver because he's going, wait, we've talked about this in our meeting rooms and all this, and when they run this little bubble screen, well, the guy that's covering Tyler Boyd is going to be blocked by my guy, so I'm the one that has to react and make the tackle. He pauses for a second because he sees Boyd run that bubble. It kind of gets him to hesitate between that and Jamar Chase kind of stalk blocking off the line of scrimmage, and then Jamar Chase goes, go gadget legs, and he flies by him for an easy touchdown. So there was, again, some of that in the football game, and I think that's where the 49ers are a hair too vanilla right now with what they're doing. You know, I love the way they play defense, but they gotta disguise and trick it up, put people at the line of scrimmage, back out, do whatever. I think that's the thing I'm looking for. And, you know, Pete, we got that screenshot, right, of the 49ers show blitz and back out and sack Joe Burrow. I think that's a good thing to show here in this situation. Because to me, this is what I would like to see more from the 49ers is that, you know, again, I love the way they do things and play football. But, you know, find ways to still do what you do, but don't let the quarterback and the offense feel so comfortable in that we know exactly what you're doing. You see here, there's seven guys at the line of scrimmage, right? It's man-to-man across the board. So it's right now, it's like, wait, I'm getting man. It looks like they're going to blitz. Who's blitzing? Let's go to the next screenshot, Pete, if we can. So you look at that, and now look what happens. They gave all these man-to-man clues, and you're thinking, well, it's surely man-to-man blitz. And what happens? They drop back and play Tampa 2. If you're a quarterback, you have no fucking clue that Tampa 2 is about to end up being the final coverage here, right? Let alone with linebackers like we showed in the first shot, and maybe we can go back to that one more time, Pete, the first one if we can, where the first shot, the linebacker standing at the line of scrimmage and all that, those are little things that create an advantage for your D-line. Because the O-line, as they're seeing Fred Warner in between the defensive tackle and the end, they're making calls in case he blitzes. Wait, you got to take him if he blitzes, and I got him, right? And all of a sudden, oh, Set Hutt, and he drops, and oh, wait, we were getting ready to, you know, to block something else, and now it's changed, and oh, no, now I got to get back out to my guy who I was going to take originally before they got in this disguise. So that little bit of hesitation can be just enough for a Chase Young or a Nick Bosa or an Eric Armstead to get home to the quarterback. So there we saw, they dropped into Tampa 2, but that little hesitation that it caused for the offensive line, boom, here you go. And you see here Nick Bosa getting the sack off the edge, and down goes Joe Burrow. That's, to me, more of what we got to see from the 49ers and when they're at their best. But I think all in all, it was not a good game by the 49ers, certainly. They had some mistakes. And again, I think because of how little they're disguising, I think they overreact a little bit to, like, wait, the team just did this to us, so now we got to call this defense. I think there's got to be a little bit more of playing with the mind of the offense overall, big picture wise, and not just overreact to what a team is doing us to in that exact moment. I see a little bit of that. And yeah, within that too, I think the 49ers have messed up a few situations, certainly. And I want to show one more play here, too, to where, again, I think the Bengals have a great feel of what the 49ers were doing on defense, and then how to kind of maybe expose their rules and make them think a little bit here. And I want to show one more screenshot or picture here of another one of my drawings here and a big moment of the football game. I believe this was 2nd and 10. And you could see Jamar Chase. There's three, for all those who are not watching on our YouTube page, there's three receivers to the right, and we got one to the left. So we got Chase to the right, Tyler Boyd to the right of him, and then T. Higgins to the right of him. Those are the three receivers to the right. Irv Smith is split out on top to the left, and then we got Mixon to the left of Joe Burrow in the shotgun, all right? And what we got here is really your cover three, quarters. Everything's based on that for the 49ers, all right? And what the two receivers on the bottom, Higgins and Boyd, they're going to run double post. Irv Smith at the top of the screen is going to run a shallow cross. Ja'Marr Chase is going to chip the D end and then also run a shallow cross, all right? And this is where teams are messing with the 49ers a little bit. And I want to just show this. If the Ja'Marr Chase runs a deep cross in this scenario, Hufanga is going to be responsible for him, the weak side safety towards the top of the screen. If he runs a shallow cross, Fred Warner is the one that has to take him. Okay, so they're playing a kind of a cover three, but they're locked on the backside. Greenlaw is covering Mixon, and Lenore is covering Irv Smith, basically man-to-man, and now they're going to go, we're going to play our five-on-three zone on your other receivers. We showed this last week in the Vikings game. So let's go to the next clip there, Pete, and there you see it. So now, Fred Warner, who is responsible for Ja'Marr Chase, he loses his way here a little bit. We know how great Fred Warner is, but, you know, one, I think he sees the blocking or the chipping there, and he doesn't stay with Ja'Marr Chase, and I think he follows Joe Burrow's eyes a little bit, and he thinks, wait, teams do stuff like this and throw in cuts behind me and do stuff like that all the time. So he's probably a little worried about that. And then off of that, see what we got here, right? So you see Hufanga up top. He is helping Tashawn Gibson on the first of the double posts, all right? All right, so that I think is all right. As I said, Lenore took Irv Smith on the shallow cross. Dre Greenlaw on the swing route is being cleared out by Joe Mixon. And now, you know, Fred Warner, who kind of loses his way a little bit, and I don't know if he forgot the rule of, wait, if it's a shallow cross, it's my guy. If it's a deep cross, it's Hufanga. Maybe he was thinking Hufanga had him all the way. But my knowledge of this coverage altogether is that, yeah, this is one where it's a zone, but Fred Warner has a rule with this type of route combination that he goes, wait, I got to run with that guy in this scenario there. So there you see he's late to recognize it. And now you got Ja'Marr Chase crossing the field on a first and 10, excuse me, and he gets an easy completion. They rally and I think tackle him to make it second and one, right? And then the next play, they actually throw another pass play where they kind of know what the 49ers are in, and they get Fred Warner in a one-on-one situation with Joe Mixon, and they convert the first down. So those, again, are some of the examples overall of what's going on there in San Francisco. They're still a really good defense. I think the bye week will be huge. Acquiring Chase Young, and then the defensive staff, Wilkes, getting in a meeting room with Shanahan, going over the first part of the season, making adjustments to, hey, how Shanahan and that defensive staff who's been in this defensive system for a long time, how they envision things, I think it will go a long way to helping that 49ers team. But the main point here is 49ers got to be better. Brock Purdy played a lot better than people think, made a lot of big-time plays. Defense has got to be better for the 49ers, and watch the fuck out for the Bengals. The Bengals, I think it's real here. It's back. And I expect the Bengals to kind of go on a run like we've seen them go on the last 2 years. With Burrow being healthy and everything, I think they found their way on offense. Like we've talked about with the Bengals, when they start to get a feel for how teams are playing certain situations and personnel sets, they start to build a playbook off of that, and they become damn good and damn effective. And I think when you couple that with the way the Bengals' O-line played, and if they can get a running game with Joe Mixon, because Joe Mixon, you know, you get him holes, he is still a dangerous mofo running the ball. He really is. He's still got pretty good speed, but more importantly, he just runs with a physicality and a recklessness that I love. And, yeah, he's a guy that runs hard, gets hit at 5 yards, and ends up falling forward for 9 yards. Or maybe breaking the tackle and getting another 10 yards after that. That, to me, was one of the big stories of the game. The Bengals O-line played their best game of the year. We'll see if they can continue that on Sunday Night Football this week against the Bills. That's going to be a fun one. Can't wait for it. All right, let's head to the other shocker of the day, right? The Chiefs offense versus the Broncos defense. Wow, right? I know. I couldn't wait to watch this yesterday. I'm going, man, this is, I'm really interested to see what this Broncos defense did. All right? They must have done some creative stuff and really, you know, slowed down. And Mahomes has been playing really surgical, pretty damn good football from in the pocket. And I've liked everything about the way he's playing. All right. So then you get into the film, and it'll throw out my first graphic. This was kind of my end summation of watching the film. And I said, wish I could tell you it was some cool game plan by the Broncos. You know, they played good D. They were sound and just played not to give up the big play. And the Chiefs played like they were bored. And on top of that, it was the worst game I've seen Mahomes play in a long time. That's the bottom line, right? That's a game where Mahomes watched the film on Sunday or Monday, and he went, what the hell was I doing? What was I looking at? He missed some opportunities of people downfield open. He definitely got caught watching the rush a few times. He definitely got off the first read or predetermined in his own mind before the snap a handful of times during the game too, where you go, what are we doing here? Like, you're Mahomes. I've never seen you miss this before. It was the first time I had watched Mahomes and had thoughts of, this looked like 2020 Mahomes in the COVID year, where, yeah, you watch games and you go, yeah, it was some good, but damn, there was some people open everywhere, and I don't know what he was looking at. I know he was sick and under the weather, and I think that, you know, maybe that affected some of his decision-making and just his comfortability playing the game overall. But that was the big theme of the football game. And again, the Broncos played sound, soft coverage for the most part throughout the game, maybe sprinkled in a blitz here and there, you know, sprinkled in a man-to-man coverage for the most part. But the most part, it was soft zones, take away the big plays, and let's see if the Patriots, if the Chiefs and Mahomes can be patient. And Mahomes was off his game. And we got a bunch of screenshots I want to show you that we can get to where I can kind of illustrate what's going on with Mahomes here. You know, here's a play, right? This is second play of the game. All right, so this was my first inkling of like, whoa, Mahomes is off here. You know, one, what he could have done here, he's looking to the left, and at the top of the screen, I believe he has Sky Moore on a comeback route, and he's got Rashee Rice underneath him, where I go, one, the comeback route, he should have thrown it all day long on the top. Right, they got Fabian Moreau, the corner from UCLA, covering Sky Moore. He's open on the top of the screen. You guys see Rashee Rice. He's going to come open underneath that if he wants to go there. If he decided he wanted to play the bottom of the screen, right, and they have a cover two concept working here, both guys are open here as well. They end up, and do we have another shot here that goes to it, or is this just the only one, Pete? Either way, both guys come open on the right side too, but Mahomes doesn't even give the guys on the top of the screen a chance. He moves on from Sky Moore before he even gets close to breaking out on his 15-yard comeback, and like I said, he was wide open. Patrick Mahomes should have thrown a strike into it, let alone he could have checked it down to Rashee Rice in front of him. Nothing happens there, okay? So ends up being a four-yard loss here for the Kansas City Chiefs. Now we get to the next play, and this is the very next play. And again, these are context clues of, like, what do we got going here, right? And this is where we got here. Okay, yes, gotcha. I'm trying to figure. This is hard hosting the show and talking about your notes at the same time. But here's a very, very similar thing to the first play. On the top of the screen, Justin Watson is running an out-and-up comeback, right? And it's a great little concept because when DBs see a double move, they start flying down the field because they're going, oh, no, they tried to double move me. They're going to throw a bomb deep. Moreau goes way deep, and Watson, as you can see in this screenshot, you throw the ball to the sidelines, he's wide open, let alone – he has the guy in the flat on that same side where if he wants to get a completion and maybe make one guy miss, there's going to be something there, right? Ends up holding the ball, you know, and that's what happens. When you pass up a completion, there's no guarantee you're going to find a completion. It's hard to find that in football. Now, Mahomes, it looked like he kind of watched the rush a little bit. He tries to look for something better. There's nothing there to be had. He usually can make magic, but they got some guys in Denver with some edge guys that can run and track him down. He ends up having to throw it away. They punt the ball. Okay, so that was like early on in the football game. First drive, two out of the first three plays, I went, uh-oh, Mahomes ain't seeing the field very good, and this is nothing drastic as far as what the Broncos are doing on the defensive side of the ball. It continues to be a theme throughout the game. Here's the middle of the first quarter, okay? This is cover three with a three-man rush, all right? You could see here at the bottom of the screen, they have a slant-flat combination with Watson and Jerick McKinnon, where if he throws the slant to Watson, which is why it's there for single safety, it's perfect for this concept. He's going to catch it. He might run for a touchdown. Either way, it's going to be a 10-yard completion. Here's the odd thing. It's a three-man rush. Mahomes throws the ball hot off his back foot like he's like not protected, and he throws it to Travis Kelce for like a one-yard gain or two-yard gain. And it's just one of those things, again, context clues where you go, man, what's he thinking? What's he doing here? Right, I know it's one thing, like if the whole area is voided, you might go, hey, let me just get it to my guy and let him run. But there was guys in front of him. It was soft coverage once again, like I've explained. It was soft coverage throughout the day. But this is basic one-on-one here where, oh, single safety defense, it's three deep zone, and I have a slant flat. You play the slant flat. Basic rules of the West Coast offense there. He doesn't for some reason and then throws an awkward, like I said, off his back foot throw. Again, more context clues of what the hell was Patrick Mahomes looking at. Here we got the interception in the second quarter. All right. It's Tampa 2. Okay. It's Tampa 2. The inside of the, he's got trips right. He's got a receiver to the left, right? Tampa 2 with three verticals. Right? Okay, it's not really made for that. It's not. You know, the linebacker is going to take the inside of the three verticals, okay? The nickel back, he's got nothing underneath him to worry about, so he's going to flow back, and he understands where the lanes are here as far as making, trying to get an interception. And Mahomes, like we kind of talked about, seems like he makes up his mind where he wants to go with the ball. Like, I'm going to fit this ball into Travis Kelce for a seam route. I'm getting frustrated with how this day's going. I'm going to make a big play. When in actuality, against this coverage, he should be working the backside in cut, which is perfect against Tampa 2, because the Will linebacker, he's worried about the trips receivers to the top, so he squeezes towards that side a little bit. There's a guy in the flat where Patrick Surtain, he is playing Tampa 2, he has to worry about flat defense, and now there's a huge hole for Sky Moore in cover 2 on the left side for an easy 12-yard in cut. But for whatever reason, Mahomes had made up his mind he was going to throw the ball to Travis Kelce here. And one of the stars of the day, Jaquan McMillan, gets the interception. He was all over the field all game long. Incredible job by him. And he gets the interception there, the first interception of Mahomes on the day. Okay, here's right before halftime. You heard me say a few minutes ago, you know, points, completions, they're not easy to come by in the NFL. Right? You can't turn them down. We get a completion here, Mahomes, right? It's not in rhythm. It's floating around Mahomes' magic. It ends up being a good gain. My point is this. There was a touchdown to be had on this play. That's the real point here. And guess what? There was a touchdown to be had, and guess what happened on the next play? Patrick Mahomes got strip sacked, fumbled, and they don't get any points on this drive. Denver recovers, right? So that's what I mean. When you miss plays like this, there's a ripple effect usually. Mahomes and company can get away with it more than anybody because he's, you know, one of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever seen all time. Let's go back to that last one just so I can explain it, okay? Just a little bit here. Because this is an overarching theme of the Chiefs in general that I think they need to be more aware of. They run these middle posts a lot of times, all right? And when they get single safety defenses, this is something John Gruden taught me at an early age, where single safety defenses, you got three receivers to the left, and maybe or even two receivers to the left, but the one guy against a three deep zone or even a man-to-man is running like a deep cross post, right? A lot of the times, it really puts the single safety who's playing his deep middle, he can't get over to defend the crosser. And as you can see on this picture here, Valdez Scantling has nobody within 6 yards of him. And if Mahomes throws a ball like I know he can throw the ball, Valdez-Scantling is going to catch the ball on the 8 or 9 yard line and be one-on-one with a safety and with a lot of space, and I'm going to say he probably scores. He doesn't score. Like I said, he gets a completion to Kelce. It all looks good. But then the next play, and let's go to it, Pete, becomes the strip sack fumble. And you see here again where this is where I think Mahomes was looking at the rush a few times. You know, this again is another one where the coverage says to go to the backside in cut. He I do believe on this one, looks at the rush, and then he's late to get his eyes up to realize, wait, Sky Moore is open on the same 12-yard in cut we showed two plays ago, right? And he now is stepping up in the pocket, and he's already missed Sky Moore open originally within the rhythm of the offense, but now he's moving and starting to scramble and do Mahomes magic, and Sky Moore is going to come open in those terms as well. But hey, yeah, the Denver defense with some of these edge guys, this Cooper, this Browning, you know, the Bonito, they're players. They fly around the football field, and of course Mahomes loses who's around him in the pocket, and as he's going to throw to Sky Moore, gets strip sacked, fumbled, and the Denver Broncos end up getting the ball. But again, more examples of just Mahomes not being on his game. The pass protection was very good throughout. It wasn't an issue of, oh, he was under pressure. As you see right here, everybody's downfield, and he doesn't have anybody with around him, and he has a pocket to step up in. But I think because he was looking at the pocket and the rush a little bit, and I know he wasn't feeling himself, he definitely was off his game in this one, and that was an issue. We got one more here, right, Pete? We got one more throw I want to show here. This was a pretty big moment. It was third quarter. We got a 3rd and 6 here. And the Broncos, this is one of the few times they man and they blitz in the football game. As you see here on the screenshot, Mahomes has got a great pocket. There's nothing to worry about at all. And they have a little 3-man bunch combination on the top. And the whole thing is to mess the defense up and man-to-man. And we're going to have a combination where one of our guys is going to get open. Kelce kind of comes off the ball and makes it look like he's going to run an out route. And he runs inside. And because of the two other receivers and how they were lined up around him, the guy covering Kelce was playing outside leverage. Now he couldn't get quite through the traffic. Kelce's wide open. I mean, he's wide open, right in front of Patrick Mahomes. You just don't see him do this much anymore. And he passes up the completion, and in my opinion, because he determined, wait, it's man-to-man, and I'm frustrated, I'm going to make a big play right here, right now. Instead of kind of just reading it out and going, you know what, I'm going to look at my first read, which is Travis Kelce, and if he's not open, then I'll push the ball down the field to the corner route to Justin Watson. He drops back here, lets the ball fly to Justin Watson on a corner route, who had the guy beat by a step, but it was a tough throw. It's 3rd and 6. Take the best tight end in the history of football, get the first down, and continue to move the ball down the field. Instead, it ends up where I believe on this one they kicked a long field goal. They might have had a punt. I can't remember exactly what they did here. But either way, it should have been a first down. And just another example of Mahomes not being on his game, not comfortable in the pocket. The clock in his head wasn't correct. And he certainly missed a few shots in that one. So this will be interesting here. You know, he's going to have to get back on his game. Got the Dolphins this week. Right, the Dolphins, we know, are going to be able to score some points and I think put some pressure on that Chiefs defense. They're going to have to keep pace. Maybe this is what they needed. Maybe they needed Mahomes to get, you know, back on track here, a little bit of wake-up call till he gets back to some of the basics and doesn't miss some of the plays that are there to be had. That's it on the Chiefs game, right? Again, I wish I could tell you it was some brilliant game plan. What it was just a smart, we don't think they're going to be patient enough. We're not going to let them have the big play. And let's see if the Chiefs can work within that environment. And they showed that they could not exactly do that in this football game. Last game from the notebook here, okay? We got a little bit of the Cowboys over versus the Rams D. And I think the big thing, and I kind of hit on this Sunday a little bit, there was more of a vertical presence in the Cowboys pass game that I had seen in any other game this year. And I think that's really what I loved about the attack, right? And to me, the big thing with them doing that, one, feature CeeDee Lamb, right? make the defense have to go, wait, we got to worry about CeeDee Lamb wherever he goes. I think that's only going to make things better for Michael Gallup, Ferguson, Brandon Cooks. It's going to, you know, of course, make their lives easier and give them an avenue to get the ball more if you start to feed CeeDee Lamb. The big thing I loved about the vertical passing game, and I saw some examples of this too, where you guys have been listening to me, the Cowboys, it's everything, jam it in there for 4 and 5 yards. It's 3rd and 4. Let's throw a 5-yard route and jam it in there and do all of that, right? And the one thing I've been trying to preach here on the podcast a little bit, you know, if it's 3rd and 4, not everybody has to run a 5-yard route. We don't have to do that. You know, what I learned in New England years ago and playing for Josh McDaniels is, hey, if we want to throw it short, let's send some people deep. More times than not, people are playing defenses to stop the short pass. So there is some opportunities to get some aggressive plays down the field. And then within that, when you start to show that and do that a little bit, what happens is you get defenses to play back and play off a little bit. You send people deep, and then you got one guy working underneath. And now it's not like, oh, I'm going to jam it in there between 7 people. It's like, wait, it's CeeDee Lamb underneath against a linebacker, or he's one-on-one with somebody covering him, but we've cleared it out with our route concepts with everybody else, and it opens up the field. So that, to me, is the thing that I loved about the game plan for the Cowboys. There was definitely, you know, a handful, 6 or 7 more aggressive concepts that I watched throughout the game. Dak played great, right? And this is where I think them just being a little more aggressive in the pass game is going to help them. One, they have a good screen game. They have a good screen playbook. You want to throw screens to the receivers or Tony Pollard? That's the best way to open that up. With people going downfield, you're worried about that. Oh, boom, there you go, Tony Pollard, big play, right? That's one thing. It's going to help their run game in Tony Pollard because it's going to get even more 2-safety defenses because they're going, damn, Dak and Mike McCarthy are dialing up deeper plays here. And, you know, these guys, you know, Gallup, CeeDee Lamb, and Cooks can go. We can't just play man-to-man bump and run there. So I think all those things are going to help their offense out, and it just makes the field more wide open. And that was kind of my summation of the game overall. I mean, the Cowboys are unbelievable. They really are. You know, they're extremely talented, and they can go on a run almost like we've seen the Chiefs be able to go on a run through their little dynasty here that you've never seen before. I mean, the game was 10-3. The Cowboys got a pick 6. It goes 17-3. The Rams go 3 and out. The punt gets blocked for a safety. The Rams now have to kick the ball off to the Cowboys because of the safety. Turbin has a big return all the way down to the 13-yard line. 2 plays later, touchdown. So you're going, man, this is 10-3, and the Rams look like they're going to hang in there. And all of a sudden, it's 2 minutes later of game time, and you go, it's 26-3. This game is over, right? That's how explosive and dangerous the Cowboys they are. But the basic thesis of what we saw, Dak was great. The offense is more wide open. Not like it was like, oh, wow, but just enough to now it opens up all the other stuff. They don't need to be a vertical and downfield passing team all the time, but when they do, it opens up the offense. Doesn't let a team play downhill all game like the 49ers and Chargers did, where they were always like, hey, it's just going to be right here in front of us. Just get ready to come downhill, you know, break up a pass or hit him as soon as he catches the ball. You know, there's too much talent on this team to throw the ball short all the time. Love how they had some plays of send people deep to throw it short. It's very tough on a defense, I as explained. And here's the things that it opens up. The Dak scramble lanes, right? Dak had a few scrambles in the game. That's going to be a nice weapon for them when you open up the field. The Pollard screen game, as I discussed already. The run game and all that will all be helped by the downfield passing game. And the Pollard passing game in general is going to have more, more validity to it because now everyone's downfield and Pollard can work underneath against a linebacker or safety. All of this will improve. Send these fuckers deep. Let number 20 or number 88 or number 3 work underneath, and it's going to stress defenses out in a big way. So that's Inside the Notebook by Chris Sims. What the F happened? Treasure Hunters edition right there. I hope everybody enjoyed that. We got one more thing to get to here in honor of my host who's missing. Yeah, Big Butt Awards. Ahmed's Big Butt Awards. Hit that intro.
It is that time. Big Butts and we cannot lie.
The Big Butt of the Week.
Oh. Awards.
time to give some love to these big guys.
Some touches.
A couple sacks, forced fumble. He's a butting superstar.
Thanks. Give it to him, Ahmed.
One butt cheek.
And this is why you're the big butt expert of the world right now.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, I don't know if we've ever had a repeat winner, but I think it's worthy. Okay? Yeah, that's right. The first big butt of winner, big butt of the week of winner. The week of winner? Is that what I just said? A week of winner is Sexy Dexy, the biggest butts of them all. The biggest butt of them all is Sexy Dexy, Dexter Lawrence. I mean, yeah, second week in a row, but let's just state it how it is. There hasn't been a defensive lineman more dominant than Dexter Lawrence the last 2 weeks. I mean, you go back and watch that game. You don't have to go back and watch it. If you watch it on Sunday, you realize that Dexter Lawrence was in the face of Zach Wilson all game long. He had 15 pressures, according to PFF. That's tied for the second most in a single game in the PFF era. All right? That's impressive. That really is. He's a one-man wrecking crew, right? He's a staple of that defense. And as we know and what we saw yesterday, I think the Giants are packing it up this year by trading Leonard Williams and throwing in the white towel and going, okay, we're going to start worrying about next year. The next one goes to another pretty obvious one that I think all of you can recognize. If you watch Monday Night Football, Max Crosby. How awesome is Max Crosby, right? Is he everywhere? You know, he's definitely one of the best defensive ends in football. I think maybe we overlook him at times, you know, compared to Bosa and TJ Watt and Micah Parsons and Myles Garrett. And I think we need to be clear that Max Crosby is in the class of those guys. He is. You know, he's incredibly explosive. He's great at getting off blocks, right? He plays 100 miles per hour all game long. This is his first elephant trophy for Crosby, right? It's long overdue. How dare Ahmed not give him the respect? You know, maybe Ahmed didn't like his butt. I don't know. Maybe it's not big enough, all right? But either way, the play on the field warrants him winning the Big Butt Award. 86 snaps were 23 more than the next highest edge player. That's insane. Because when you watch Max Crosby, it's not like he takes plays off and like manages his energy for the game. It's like every play is the last play of the game. So, you know, and then he leads all edge players. And where you saw him the other night was what he could do in the run game. I mean, he's phenomenal in the run game. 8 tackles, a true dominant force, you know, that, of course, gives him no help on defense. It's not like you're worried about blocking anybody else. But that was an unbelievable performance by Dexter Lawrence and Max Crosby. The big butt of the week award winners, way to go. You know, and Ahmed wanted it to be stated that is proof that you don't need to win the game to bring home the big butt trophy, aka football is a team sport. Well said by Ahmed and Pete. All right. We got one little breaking news here as we go out. The Falcons will start Taylor Heinicke at quarterback over Desmond Ridder. Not shocked by this decision. If you were watching the Tennessee Titan game last week, that was the best the offense looked at the Falcons all year. Desmond Ridder, this doesn't mean it's the end for him. You know, now he can go back, recalibrate a little bit. You know, but I think, again, they've been winning games in spite of Desmond Ridder. The NFC South is there to be had. Taylor Heinicke's played a lot of football. He played really good the other day. I think they're going to be a better offense with him at the quarterback position. Desmond Ridder, hey, you're still young. Keep fighting. I hear people go, well, this is going to ruin his confidence. I don't know if he'll be the same. Well, if it ruins his confidence and he won't be the same, then you know he's not your quarterback for the future anyways, right? Obstacles happen. I saw Joe Montana get benched. If Joe Montana can get benched, anybody can get benched, all right? That's all I got to say about that. Desmond Ridder, keep fighting the good fight. I still got faith in you. This gives him a chance to take a deep breath and kind of reevaluate himself and how he was playing the position. All right, everybody, tomorrow, got the Week 9 picks with Florio, PFT, PM, Chris Sims Unbuttoned Collaboration. You know where to find me on social media, at CSimsQB on Twitter, at Sims Unbuttoned on Instagram, at Sims Unbuttoned on TikTok. Yeah, I'm young. I'm cool. Deal with it. All right, peace out, homies. Clap it up. Solo clapper.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble.
Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.